radical idea. We'll cross the streams.
Excuse me, Egon. You said crossing the streams was bad.
Cross the streams.
Hello once again, everybody. Welcome to Crossing Streams, your weekly television streaming podcast out of San Diego, California, USA. Episode number 132 of this podcast. Craig Elston back with you. I am thrilled to welcome back to the podcast one of our most consistent and most popular contributors, one of the co-hosts of the Ben and Woods Morning Show on 97.3 The Fan here in San Diego. I only call him Chuck privately, never publicly.
Hey, all right, Chuck.
It's Stephen Woods. What's up, Woodsy?
Excuse me. How you doing, man? I figured today, you know, if we're going to talk about Dave, you want to embrace the kind of the Dave-esque lifestyle. Dave and Benny Blanco, right? Laying on a hammock. I do have pants on.
God.
But yeah, what a beautiful day here in San Diego. And what a beautiful show our beloved Dave is turning into.
Well, we are here to talk about the first five episodes so far of season two of Dave. I think a little bit over halfway, or maybe at the halfway point of season two of this great FX comedy, which shows back on Hulu. So you can watch it Wednesdays, on FX or on Hulu, streaming the next day. And, you know, we've got a lot to get into. Obviously, Dave, season one, you and I talked about. I had it ranked, I think, 11th or 12th on my top 25 last year. One of the very best shows of the year. And a show I got to give you credit for, Woods, because this is one of the rare ones you brought to me last year. And you said, Craig, you got to get into Dave. And, man, one of your best recommendations ever.
Yeah, thank you. And that was a recommendation from our old assistant producer, Alex the Hammer Perlin, who is such a character in his own right. And, you know, when he turned me onto it originally, I was like, bro, I'm 20 years older than you. You like terrible, trip hop rap music. And I, you know, listen to AC/DC and Ozzy, and it's just not going to be a fit. And I think we talked about it the last time we talked about Dave. It took all of 7 seconds and it just had me. And I laughed so hard the very first episode of season one that I was like, dude, it blew me away. It really did. It was like nothing I'd ever seen. And, you know, we've all grew up watching comedies and slapstick comedies, but I had never seen anything like this. And it continues. It continues in that very same vein. It's so great.
Yeah. Season one found its voice, came in with a heavy comedy load early, very slapstick, very funny, almost a little bit gross out.
Raunchy. Kind
of found, yeah, raunchy. Really found in the middle of the season, I thought, a bit of its heart and a little bit of its brains as well. It became a show that was more willing to challenge things as season one went on. And it got to a point, I thought, episodes 9 and 10 of season one, where it really hit a high creative level, both in the way that they showed Dave and Allie's breakup. And then also that final episode with the extended video, the jail video at the beginning and ending with Charlemagne the God, Dave's appearance on his show. It had to have been a challenge for both Dave Bird and the creators of Dave to go, okay, we've made this thing for season one that was so unique. Where do we take it from here for season two?
God, Benny, you have to bring this guy around more often.
No, seriously, I'm obsessed with it.
$1,900 last week on sex paraphernalia instead of making an album.
I have to cream.
You have to cream. Can you cream a little bit less then?
Oh, slow down, baby.
How's the actual album coming along?
You don't have anything. You've got nothing.
I've got a whole lot of other things going on, socially, professionally, borderline sexually, but I'll leave
it. Wait, before you even finish, I'm gonna walk away.
Okay.
My life on paper couldn't be better. I'm actually a rapper. I'm on this new online dating platform.
Is she Jewish?
Wikipedia actually does say that she's half Jewish.
Oh, what's the other half? That's wonderful.
Check her out.
Full-breasted, that's for sure.
Yeah. All right, Dan. Why don't you run? You got Carol over there.
Are you, like, retired from rap or something and nobody home?
Hey! I'm that desperate to succeed! This is from the era when guys were, like, you know, going around dribbling like this, you know? And they're just, like, running around, right? And they're... I feel like they were, like, Jewish men in the league back then.
Yeah, it's and you know, it's funny. I know one of the executive producers of Dave, Max, and Max is a huge Padre fan. He listens to our show. I know he listened to our podcast when we talked about Dave before, and I've talked with him about it. I've texted with him about it before, and you know, it was a challenge. And again, so it was the craziest thing, Craig. He and I chatted around when the pandemic started, when they started writing. And I, you know, he literally asked me, like, what do you think? Like, what would you do? You know, you're semi-creative person. What would you do? And I go, well, I'm like, shit. You know, here we are. We're in a pandemic. There's a lockdown, blah, blah, blah. And he goes, you know, it's funny. He's like, certain people had that idea and we really don't want to touch it. Like, everyone's going to be pandemicked out. Everyone's going to be quarantined out. And I went, yep. So what I did is I went for the obvious, right? I went for the obvious jokes, the obvious storyline. And when you start watching season two, it's not what they did by a long stretch. And, you know, I was really thinking about it. I was looking at some of the notes you sent over and I thought to myself, it's got the come up for a band, an artist. It's always romanticized, right? Like, oh yeah, man, we had so much fun playing those clubs and riding around in those vans. And man, then we had that big record and it hit and all the money and all the fame. And, you know, and then everything went to shit, right? Is usually how it goes. And that's kind of the avenue that they've taken for season two of Dave. And it was such a jagged turn and it's so great. And it's just like, I didn't know what to expect. And it's highly anticipated every week by me. I mean, it's just one of those where I'm like, Jesus, what am I going to see now? And they continue to make me go every single week, one way or the other, you know, funny, happy, or sad, scary, worried, you know, it's got the whole thing.
It really does, man. And you bring up Max, who has been on Crossing Streams, yeah, you know, and thanks to you has become a friend, and we text back and forth, you know, a lot. And I always forget whether his last name is Searle or Surly.
Yeah,
I think it's Searle. I think it's Searle. But apologies, Max, when you're listening to this, if I mixed up your name, we'll get it right when we get you on for these end of season Dave podcast, which he's already agreed to do.
Hell yeah.
But I tell you, man, they had choices to make going into season two in terms of, we've got a popular thing. Do we want to kind of redo it, you know, run it back and get those same laughs and maybe get those same ratings, get that kind of same overall feel? Or do we want to take it to a new place in a new direction? And clearly that was the creative decision made by Dave Bird and his team. Because we have, I think, in season two here, Woodsy, I think we have both a better, a higher quality show, but also a show that is very challenging at times, and one that I could understand, like, a more casual viewer being like, this isn't as funny as the Dave I remember in season one.
Yeah, it's... you know, it's, I think with every great show, you know, you have to have the unexpected, you have to have great characters, you have to have great character development, the character has to grow, you know, it's like, I like some AC/DC songs, but every AC/DC song sounds the same. I mean, every single one, it's like, I bought, you know, this record, you know, from 1978, and it sounds like the same one from 1986. I mean, they had a formula, they stuck to it, you know, more power to them, and God bless them. They built a huge career, but it does get a little bit redundant, you know, at times. And Dave as a creative, I just imagine him. I imagine his real life is not much different from that character. That's just how I feel. I don't know that to be true. But I feel like he gets bored easily. I feel like he's kind of hard to tame. I feel like he has a hard time sitting still. And if he is sitting still, he's like, what am I doing? He's an overthinker, you know, classic overthinker. And I loved, obviously the first episode was such a, like, it was like a train. It was like a, it took you on like four different rides, you know, really. There was a time in the first episode, I was worried. Like I was legitimately, it was like drama filled. And then, you know, it always kind of comes back to the funny and Dave being the kind of central character of that. But you've seen a guy that's like had such a small taste of success. Right. And he's just like right on the cusp of breaking out. So in my mind, I kind of thought, all right, season two is going to open with him popping bottles, doing blow with girls all around. And he's really going to be enjoying that lifestyle. Wasn't the case. Wasn't the case at all. And now the guy's sitting there dying, you know, dying, trying to take the next step. And it's a crazy ride.
Yeah, instead of having a lot of women around, he's got a lot of paraphernalia.
Hey, yeah, paraphernalia. Yeah, exactly. It's so uncomfortable, even to me, who is not very easily shocked or offended. I'm like, good God, man! Like, good God! They continue to push those boundaries, and again, you nailed it earlier when you said, you know, you can understand why people that really loved season one for its comedy are a bit confused by season two. I happen to love the confusion.
Right. And that's the thing, because it stems from a critical choice that's been made by this creative group, which is to have Dave in season two, not in any way centered as the hero of the story, but instead to almost always be the antagonist of the story. Yeah. He's really almost every single episode has been taking Dave down a peg, you know, starting in Korea, you know, and how poorly things go in the season premiere in Korea, to then seeing episode two, his mental block, his writer's block, you know, really. And he's presented as being egotistical, braggadocious, controlling, micromanaging, like all of these elements, but he isn't putting up his end of the bargain. He's not delivering the songs. He's not delivering the content. He's just delivering kind of the star angst and you know, all that type of level. And I really thought it was very interesting in the first two episodes to give Dave essentially no success, because the end of the pilot episode has him in the studio there, you know, with the established rapper, getting a chance to kind of freestyle on IG, getting a chance to take off a little bit. There are elements of his success weaved in throughout season one, whereas in season two, yes, he's got money. Yes, he's got his crew. He's clearly got notoriety, but he's not doing what he's supposed to do. All the way through, really, Dave has just been getting taken down over and over again. And while I definitely appreciate it, that's where I come back to, like, if you're just a fan of Dave, there's a way to go like, yeah, I didn't enjoy any of those episodes because Dave hasn't looked good in any of these episodes.
Yeah, you watch him and you're like, look, I always knew that, because it's hard. Like, you can't be a Dave, or you can't be that that big or have aspirations that big and not have some part of you be a self-centered, egotistical dick. Maybe Tom Hanks. I'm trying to think of, like, you know, that Dave as a person. You knew he was so confident, so full of himself, and also so insecure. But when you watch him in this one, you're like, oh, so now you're a dick to everyone. And like you said, you're not doing the work. You're not holding up your end of the bargain. You're a number one draft pick that gets to spring training. And you're like, I don't have to take ground balls. I don't have to take extra BP. I'm a number one draft pick. Like, I got $4 million. as a signing bonus, and that's it, you know. And we've seen that story play out in professional sports a billion times, and it's probably happened in the music industry as well. And but when you watch him, Craig, you know, suffer with that writer's block, I mean, it is like, it's like, you know, I watched it and just went, oh my God. Because if you've ever done anything creative, and I know you have, and you know I have, when you're like, I need something. I got nothing. I'm dying. I texted Max and I go, it's funny. I'm in this little vein myself right now, where I just can't think of anything good. I just can't think of anything good, fun, creative. I'm tired. And he's like, dude, that's the real life. And that's what those guys go through, man. And, he's lost all of his swag, and he is lashing out at all of those around him. And, you know, God bless Gata for always having his back. We could all use a Gata in our life.
No question. So we kind of went through the first two episodes right there. In terms of, you know, I thought it had a great splashy set piece to start episode one of season two, the whole being in Korea is like, wow, okay, the show clearly has more money now. It's taking bigger swings. It's taking bigger chances overall. You get through those first two episodes, and that's when I think I came on, you know, Ben and Woods, and talked about season two, and I thought they were both really good. They were quality episodes. They were fine. The next three have launched the show into another level. Yeah. And, you know, you talk about texting with Max, because after I watched episode three, which has to be so far the most like out there episode of Dave in the show's run. And yeah, I texted him. I was just like, Hey, Chuck.
Hey, Chuck.
It was a brilliant, brilliant show, Chuck. Funniest, yeah. Hardest I've laughed, Chuck. And like what he wrote back was, haha, like, I've gotten so much mixed reaction. It's either people telling me best episode of TV ever, or I will never watch your show again.
So, like I said, in season one, when he talks about his penis problems, when he, the milking table, all of those, you see that and you go, oh my God. Chuck, the episode with him and Benny bromancing out at Benny's house, you know, just getting high and doing the weirdest shit, yeah, of all time. Things that 10, 11, 12 year old kids, you'd be like, all right, dude, like that's, you know, I guess you could explain it away as a 12 year old, not as a grown ass successful man. You know, no successful man tries to blow bubbles with his ass with gum and shoving gum in his ass. And it's, you know, the funny thing is too, dude, Dave is so, he doesn't know, like, he finds himself constantly being challenged, right? Charlemagne the God challenges the shit out of him, right? Dave's in a weird spot being a very white, very talented rapper. And, you know, he gets accused of cultural appropriation by Charlemagne the God, and he just kind of gets backed in a corner. He's constantly being pushed and constantly being questioned, and everything he does, he's just like, like, I don't know where to turn. I just need to be myself, and I will cut through eventually. But he doesn't know who he is anymore. And so he starts hanging out with Benny Blanco, and Benny, you know, it's such a cool way that they do it too, because Benny Blanco is like a really successful music producer in real life. And they just
a real person, not an actor,
real, not an actor. Like, that's him. And by all accounts, that's him. And I follow him on Instagram. That's him. It's the same dude. He's one of the funniest guys I've ever seen. And one of those naturally freakishly talented guys. And those two together is just like, that episode, I was like, eh. But what happens is Gata and his buddy come over, yep, and then they start questioning Dave. They start questioning Benny, saying, you know, this is something only white people get to do. Only white, yep, people get to do shit like you guys are doing. We can't do it. And when they started talking about, you ever see any black bromances? You know, and they're like, Rush Hour? I mean, dude, it's legendary stuff. And I think I texted Max the same. I go, dude, my skin is crawling right now, but I love it. I love it. It's so well done and a little bit avant-garde and a little bit, you know, left turn. And there are a lot of people that I know that were like, I don't get it. I don't get it at all. I'm like, well, then it's like Levitard, right? Like, you don't get the show then. If you don't get it, then you don't get the show. That's what they were going for. They wanted to make you die a little bit watching that episode. Yeah.
No, that's it. And obviously we saw in season one, too, Dave's willingness to do physical humor, right?
Oh, yeah.
And that goes back to the root of always making fun of his junk and, you know, making fun of his physical appearance. And then, you know, going through the milking table season one, the diarrhea humor in season one. So I really felt that episode three fit. It was of a piece with the series. Like if it might be hard for someone from the outside to accept that, but I was like, no, this is of a piece. And it's going to be weird. You'll hear as I contrast this, because I was extremely comfortable in a weird way with episode three. I was expecting that level of humor. I thought it was very, very funny. I thought it was very, very well done. And particularly having Gata and his friend come in, you know, put the edge on it in the right way. But I really get how people are like, oh my God, that episode made me feel really uncomfortable.
Yeah.
But I got to tell you, the episode that made me feel uncomfortable was the next episode, episode four, titled Kareem Abdul-Jabbar. Because I think of all the different forms of humor, that one of putting somebody in bad situation that's socially untenable and then just kind of slowly turning the heat up, you know, and just making it worse and worse and worse. Unlike episode three, I probably hit pause on episode four like 24 times out of my own personal like thing that I've developed over these years of like when I'm watching a show that makes me extremely anxious, now because we're at home and we're streaming, I can just press pause and be like, like, you know, just like back off, come back to it a few minutes later, hit it. I mean, I probably stopped. I'm not even kidding. I probably stopped that episode 20 different times because of Dave being so clueless and Kareem Abdul-Jabbar, who I have so much respect for and know where he's coming from and just understand how terrible Dave is being throughout the episode to Kareem. And it's like, oh my God, speaking of making my skin crawl, that made like my brain skin crawl.
Yeah, it's your nightmare. You know, if we all, I think everybody has a tendency these days, especially, we all go off a little bit half-cocked about things, right? All of us. We all have social media. We all have a platform. We all have very strong opinions. We all think our opinions matter. And we all go off a little bit half-cocked about things from time to time, sometimes being trolly, but also sometimes not thinking how maybe it affects people or, you know, a different side of it. I'm as guilty as anybody out there. And boy, do you hate when you get got, you know, you hate when you get got and you hate when somebody schools you on it, you know, and somebody asks those tough pointed questions and where you're like, nope, you know what? I just sound like a big dumb jackass at this point and probably need to think twice before opening my mouth again. And you know, Dave's humor with Kareem, it doesn't cut through. You know, Kareem is less than impressed with, you know, what Dave is all about. And so it just, it was really cringy, really, really cringy. You know, the Benny Blanco season, the episode before was cringy in a different way. And this one was cringy in like, oh no, 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 you're an idiot. You're an idiot. You're an idiot. Stop talking. Stop talking. He dug himself into 1,000 holes, backed himself into 100 corners and just gets completely obliterated and schooled by Kareem. And you know, the other thing too is there's that want to reconcile with Allie.
Mm-hmm.
And they have a little moment, you know, in the Benny Blanco episode. And I've always loved those two together. I'm telling you their breakup episode. Like I had tears in my eyes. I told Max, I go, man, this thing knocked me on my ass. And then when they like had their little moment, I was like, oh, that's so cool. And then to see the look in her eye the next morning when she kind of comes to, and she's like, why are you here? Everybody is turning on Dave. Everybody is turning on him. And really, they're not. He's doing it to himself, and he's done it to himself. He's made his bed. He's reaping what he has sowed.
Absolutely.
For so long. And he just keeps, like, I don't know, Craig, do you get the feeling that all of this, it's all leading towards like something really great for him? Because we're now getting to the point where I do want to see my guy back. I want to see my guy back. Like you could only watch Tony Soprano mope around the house in a bathrobe so long until you're like, go out there and do what you do, you know? And he just is getting the shit kicked out of him every episode.
Oh, that's a great point. It's leading me into kind of the next direction I wanted to go, because I really do think there's such a deep challenge with creating a show where you're going to spend the season sometimes dunking on your protagonist and other times really showing him to be an antagonist to the story. And some of our greatest, television of the last 20 years has come out of these areas. And you mentioned Tony Soprano, Walter White, great characters who were not good people. And shows really dealing with the negative aspects of their personality in a smart way. Trying to make it funny, that's more of a Curb Your Enthusiasm, I'd say, area, right? Larry David, not a good person, but, very funny. And I think sometimes they go there, but they're going deeper on Dave than they ever do on any episode of Curb. They're really treating it a lot more seriously. And along those lines, I agree with you, Woods. I've been thinking all along, like, either this is just the Empire Strikes Back season of Dave, where Dave just takes every loss in the world and at the end is going to be missing his left hand. Or he's got to have a win at the end of the year. Like, all of this has got to be leading to some kind of success, doesn't it?
Yeah, you would think so, man. And I love that Empire Strikes Back. It's a really good point. You got to think, man, like every person in his life, his manager's pissed at him because he lied. He lied and said he had an album. He doesn't have it. He has nothing. He's gone to the well. It's not there. L's maybe my least favorite character on the show. Probably a good dude in real life. But when I watch the show and I hear him talk, like, I want to put him through a wall. and I really do. Like, and maybe that's the that's what they want. He's not a likable dude. He's kind of a douchebag, and he he's feeling himself a little too hard, in my opinion. I don't like the character. But he's turned his back on Dave. He's clowning Dave now. He's getting success, real success, working with some huge, huge names. And Dave's just dying, and everybody is mad at Dave, except for Gata. Gata's the only one that ever has his back. Gata's the heart and soul of that show, and every minute I spend with Gata, I love him even more. And, look at that and go, my God, like, he truly is the only one I think left that believes in Dave, including Dave himself. I think Gata's the only one that sees it. And even now Gata's like, well, I mean, I got to do something, I got to do something. If Dave's just going to be sitting there worried about ants and, worried about everything else, like, I got to keep doing my thing and stay on the right track. And he does. But man, it is L after L after L after L. And he just keeps getting it. They're not only losses like, hey, I wrote a song and the record company doesn't like it. It's like, my ex-girlfriend hates me, loathes me. My best friend thinks I'm a clown and a joke and thinks I'm a shitty artist. My manager gave up his career for me and he's mad at me. Like, Kareem Abdul-Jabbar just schooled me. Like, this just, he's got.
And then I managed to get him hurt in my bathroom.
Yeah, I got him hurt. Yeah, I hurt Kareem Abdul-Jabbar. And yeah, it's to the point now where I'm like, all right, bro. Like, I keep waiting for, like you said, that season one moment when they're like, man, this dude can't rap. And then he's like, blah, 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 blah. And you're like, the first time we saw that, we're like, holy shit, this guy's legit. He's legit. And you leave there, that Ted Lasso feeling of like, hell yeah. And you just, you haven't seen it yet. It is a dejected, insecure shell of the guy that he was.
As a Kareem Abdul-Jabbar in shock on a gurney being backed into an ambulance said in deep frustration to Dave, you're not.
Yeah, you're not.
You're not. And yeah. They didn't even finish it. You're not, yeah. What? And Dave was, yeah, just like, I'm not.
I'm not. I'm just not. And that sums him up this year. He's just not. He doesn't, whatever it was that he had is clearly gone. And he is spending the year trying to access, you know, pull from the reservoir of talent, of ability that he has. And it's just like, it's just gotta be the most terrifying, sinking feeling. I've listened to interviews of musical artists that have experienced writer's block, you know, and write a big hit, a huge hit, you know, and go out and you play it 250 times in a year and you make a ton of money, and it's like, all right, where's the next one? Let's hear the next one. And you're like, I don't know that I have another one. What do you think of this? And they're like, no, that's terrible. And you're like, oh shit, all right, well. And it's just a spiral, and he's just in the drain. He's in the drain right now. He's just circling it right now. And and it's funny. Like I was talking to my producer, Paul, that he doesn't like season two. You know, I think he wanted more of the, and you know, you hate to be, I'm probably too forgiving sometimes when I'm as in on something as I was on season one, I can get a little clouded. You know, we get that way with our favorite baseball team. We get that way with our favorite bands. And it's like, nah, man, once I'm a fan of yours, like you got me, you know, it's going to be hard to lose me. Right. Like the Padres, it's going to be hard to lose you ever. Right. And so that's how I feel about Dave. I love him so much. I love the show so much. It's like, try new shit. I'm into it. I want to see what you guys can come up with.
Well, I agree. And I've made this comparison. I made it on your radio show between Dave and Atlanta. Atlanta being my favorite show of the past 3 years.
Really good.
And the thing about Atlanta was every time you clicked play on an episode, you really didn't know where it was going to go.
Nope. No idea.
And quite often, the only thing you knew is that it wasn't going to do what it did the last time. It was going to do something else. And I'm getting that feeling right now from Dave, you know, and especially those last three episodes, you know, three into four into five, each one in a different way, really putting a unique episode up for everyone to enjoy. We talked about three and four, the latest one, which just came out yesterday as we record this, episode five titled Bar Mitzvah. I thought was very interesting in that in this episode, we are revisiting a setup that we had in season one, right? Season one, episode two was a bar mitzvah that Dave was going to play at, but then Macklemore showed up. And that was, you know, I mean, it was funny in a different way. This time, Dave is, you know, established. He's going to get a rate. He's at a bar mitzvah. And again, everything goes wrong. Every time he opens his mouth, it seems like he's putting his foot in it one way or another in this season. And also episode five did a great job of taking all of our main characters and kind of giving us their reset spot in terms of, okay, this is where they're at now. So you talked about Els, and episode five was a big contentious episode between Dave and Els. And while Dave feels like has some reason to feel upset at Els has some reason to feel upset at Dave, you know, and we heard Els in a conversation with his manager on the phone going like, yeah, I wasn't asking for credit on those. That was a test. That was a test to see how Dave reacted. And he did not react the way I wanted.
Yeah. He failed.
Mike, his manager, who's had, I think, a great season. Episode three was
great.
Wonderful. Was wonderful.
So good.
and you know, he's a lost boy in his world now. So it's really interesting. I thought episode five was great in terms of giving us a familiar setting, but then showing us in that familiar setting, the characters have changed so much from the last time that you saw them in a similar spot.
Yeah. And, you know, I know I keep going back to Gata because he's such a loyal guy. He's such a good friend, and he's so talented in his own right. And he, you know, his little moment he had was the first real win winning, good, heartfelt feeling, I think, of this season. Him on the car, you know, doing his thing and all the kids being into him. And he, it kind of flipped, you know, Dave's on his way home, kicked out, and you know, not getting paid. And there's Gata showing up after a really, really rough night, you know, and a real humbling night, letting him know, oh yeah, like, you're not there yet. You know, he got humbled and he pulls up to the bar mitzvah late, you know, and then he's like, all right, well, I'm going to make the best of it and I'm going to do my thing. And he did. Now, and you wonder, all right, is Dave about to lose the last remaining, you know, friend really that he has, the last person that believes in him? Because how will Gata react to getting a little success on his own, you know? And yeah, if his song, what if his song hits, you know, and he's, hey, Gata, we want you, your buddy Dave, he's then the afterthought. And so, yeah, I've got a lot of stuff going through my head. But like you said, man, they could open the next show, Craig, and all be in the Bahamas or something partying, and you don't know how they got there, and you just know that that's where they're going to take you. So that's what I love about it the most. I don't need a serial sitcom, you know. I right. need, you know, kind of days in the life of these guys and these creative people, and it's a good look inside of just how much bullshit they have to put up with, how much bullshit there is in LA in that world, and how much flexing's going on and all that. And it's like, whew, it's gotta be hard to keep up with.
So bottom line for me so far, season two of Dave, and I just reiterating what you and I have both said. I personally think this show has taken a step forward, not a step sideways, not a step back. I think it's a better show than season one. I am truly fascinated with the direction they're heading. I, as you and I just talked about, we're not sure, you know, like, we think maybe he's heading to a win, maybe not. You know, I know from the trailer for the season, there's going to be a romantic interest coming in at some point in the second half of the year. So I'm looking forward to seeing a little bit of that. But to me, just like my bottom line, Woods, is it takes a group that has true confidence and that truly understands themselves and has a bold vision of what they want their show to be, to go this direction with Dave, understanding that if it just had bombed, this would be it for the show. This could be a ding on little Dickie's resume, you know? And instead, it's really, to me, it just illustrates the confidence that Dave Bird has and that his showrunners have to take the show in this creative direction that is challenging, that is sometimes extremely discomforting, you know, and to do that nonetheless, understanding by the end of this, you're going to get the journey we're taking you on. Just strap in. And I really appreciate it.
Yeah, as do I. Like I said, I mean, it's a highly anticipated watch for me every week. And I always watch it Thursday. It airs on Wednesday on FX. And I always watch it Thursday, you know, on Hulu. And I look forward to it so much every single week, because I literally don't know what I'm going to see. I have no idea what this dumbass genius is going to do. You know, I have no idea where they're going to go, how they're going to get there. And I love that about it, man. I think, you know, if you're, you know, I'm a dad of two and I'm work on the radio. My whole life is minutes and seconds, and I got to be here at this time, and you're a dad and you know how that is. Schedules and this and that, and it's something that you can tune into and go, okay, this is, you blew my mind. You took me, you know, you tuned into Seinfeld for years and you knew exactly what you were getting. You laughed your ass off every time, but you knew, well, they're gonna be in Jerry's apartment, they're gonna be in the coffee shop, Kramer's gonna walk in, they're gonna do something stupid, and there was a comfort in that too. But I like this as well. I like when people take chances, and especially if those people are super talented, super dynamic, super funny, super edgy, and they have all those characters. So, and I, you know, I love Taylor Mizziak, so I'm like her biggest fan. And I think she's crushed it in her small couple of appearances so far this year.
Dave, season two, jump into it, get into it hard, folks. We'll come back to it at the end of the season with executive producer Max Searle to join us and go through and dish all of the dirt on Dave season two. Now, we wrap up every week on Crossing Streams with our recommendation segment. This is a segment that's turned into a weekly segment on Ben and Woods on Friday mornings. It's called What We're Watching. This is where we get a chance to tell everybody not only what we're watching right now, but also to set up future episodes of Crossing Streams. So, my friend, Mr. Woods, what have you been watching other than Padre 8-0 comebacks?
Oh, God, freaking Padre baseball. So I've been watching Mr. In-Between, as you know, that you recommended to me a while back. That's become in my top five all-time shows. I watch them, and then I immediately go back and I watch it again. Like, yeah. It's only about 20 minutes once you boil it down on Hulu or whatever. And I watch it, and I just start it over again for anything I may have missed. I laugh. I'm upset. You know, it's one of my favorites. So I've been watching that. That movie that you recommended on our show today, the Soderbergh movie.
No Sudden Move.
I was on staycation, kind of at the end of a long day, and I put it on, and Benicio del Toro and Don Cheadle, and I was like, I'm in. Kieran Culkin, I was like, I'm in. I made it 20 minutes before I fell asleep, but it was not the movie's fault. It is me and my lifestyle's fault. And I fell asleep, but I'm fully going to go back and watch that. Really, that's really it. I mean, between Mr. In-Between, Padres baseball, and Dave, and two kids under the age of three, and a wife, I got my hands full. So I'm lucky I get those in.
You're set, brother. Well, you just mentioned No Sudden Move, and I want to mention it as well, because I don't know when we might spend a podcast segment on it. But I'll say what I said to you on the radio today. This is a perfect movie. You know, Steven Soderbergh is to Capers what In-N-Out Burger is to Double Doubles.
Yeah.
You know, like, just do one thing and do it perfectly.
Yeah, crush it.
And No Sudden Move just fits in the pantheon from Ocean's 11 to Logan Lucky, you know, to this film. It's got all the stars. It's got perfect script, perfect dialogue, very clever cinematography. You will be confused at some point because he uses a fisheye lens for almost the entire movie. But then really by the end, I think thematically it actually makes sense. What he was trying to get at, just kind of the mood he was trying to create of someone's always watching. And I absolutely love this movie. I couldn't recommend it enough. I feel like if you're in for a Capers are my favorite because there's this joyous kind of fun element to it where you know things are going to go wrong, but you don't get anxious. You don't get nervous because it's just part of the nature of the caper. And that's what you've got here. It's just immaculate. Everything spools out exactly the right way. And you just tell me Soderbergh, caper, go. I am going to sit down, knife and fork, eat the whole meal. And that's what this is.
Yeah. It seems like one I'm going to need to, not going to be one I can play around on my phone while I'm watching and or have a kids running through the, you know, I need to set aside a couple of hours and watch it. And I'm planning on it. Oh, the other thing that I watched recently that I loved was, I watched a documentary on Whitey Bulger. Now, I'd seen Black Mass. I love Johnny Depp. I love, you know, mafia of any kind, or, you know, Irish, Italian, it doesn't matter. but I'd never seen the documentary. And it's called Whitey. And I think it's on Prime right now. And man, you want to talk about a head spinner, you know, and when you hear about how the FBI and so there's so many cover-ups going on and how essentially they let this guy get away with being a mafioso, running a gang in Boston and turning their backs and letting him essentially murder people and covering up for him, covering up for people in the department. You know, there's a lot of finger pointing. The Boston accents in it are tremendous, tremendous. And it's one of the best docs I've seen in a long time. I mean, it was so good. I watched it in the Padres blowout the other night. And then I needed like 20 minutes left. It was so good. I put it on my phone as I was driving and I just plugged it in. I was listening to it as I drove to work at 4 o'clock in the morning. that's another one I watched that I recommend if you like that stuff. And I can't get enough of that. So I was all in.
Just a couple of other notes on my scorecard as we get out of here. Last week, Ryan Phillips mentioned to me Kevin Can F Himself, at which point I then watched it, recommended it to your audience on the Ben and Woods radio program. I've watched all of the available episodes to this point now, 4 episodes. I think Kevin Can F Himself is a really, really interesting premise show that is being extremely well acted and is being delivered in a high quality manner. I'm still curious ultimately where they're going to go with the show. But if you didn't catch last week, or you haven't heard, the premise being that you've got a woman in a terrible marriage, but really what it is it's two shows. Whenever she's on the screen with her husband, it's a multi-camera sitcom with a laugh track, with a Seinfeld type, you know, score behind you. Boom, 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 pow, you know, that kind of thing.
Yeah.
And then the second that the husband leaves the room, like as the door closes on the husband, boom, the lights go out and it becomes a dark one camera drama of her trying to sort out her life. I've really enjoyed it. I just think Annie Murphy is on a star turn here, building out from Schitt's Creek to an even greater role. So go check it out if you haven't, folks. Kevin Can F Himself is airing on AMC. So you can either watch it on AMC.com or through whoever your provider is. You know, for example, for me, it's on Fubo. For you, it could be Hulu Live TV or YouTube TV or whatever. But Kevin Can F Himself. And then very last thing, because it'll be next week's show, I've started season 7 of Bosch. The 7th and final season of
I'm on season 2 and I like it a lot. I started it, loved season 1. It's just one of those, just kind of got lost in the shuffle. Yeah. And I'm like, oh, I loved it. I'm going to go back to it. There's no question. There's nothing about it I don't like. For me, it's always just, there would be nothing that would make me happier, Craig, than to have a Sunday to just lay on the couch and watch like 9 Bosches. It doesn't exist in my world anymore ever. So, I'm going on a vacation in August with my son. I'm taking my 3-year-old back home to see my folks in Texas.
Nice.
All they want to do is hang out with him. And so I am filing away. I told my parents, I go, don't be surprised if I lock myself in a room for about 48 hours and don't just put food under the door. I want to sleep and watch TV, and they want to spend time with him. And I said, great. And so that's one of those ones where like, I'm like almost savoring it for when I go in mid-August. One, I'm just going to crush the whole season once I get there, because I really like Bosch a lot.
So coming up next week on the show, on episode 132 of Crossing Streams, we are going to have a 2-pronged program, as our regular Marvel correspondent, Ken Garten, will return, Red the Trucker, and we will get into the season finale of Loki and wrap up the entire first season of Loki on Disney Plus. And then making his, I think, 3rd, 4th appearance on Crossing Streams, Channel 8, CBS 8 news anchor Carlos Sichetto, who is the #1 Bosch fan in San Diego County.
Yeah.
Carlo and I will get together. I think this is the 3rd time that he and I have got together to talk specifically about Bosch. So we'll get into Bosch season 7, and that will be taking place next week. I'll just tell you on the way out, I've been bumping against the season 7 premiere a little bit, just because Bosch is so stylistically different from almost every other show I'm watching right now, where it's really plot driven. It's really driven on the story, and it's not as character driven, you know? And so the characters have some like real kind of curt dialogues, and I'm just used to that deeper level of character. And so like, this has happened to me though, every season, like the last couple seasons of Bosch is like, I'm away from it for a year. I get back, I'm like, do I even like this show anymore?
Do I like this show? Yeah.
Right. And then I get into it and I'm like, oh yeah, now I remember what I really like about it. So, you know, be prepared. If you're like me, be prepared for that adjustment period. But Woodsy, thank you so much. Carving out the time late in the week. And don't forget, everybody, if you happen to live in San Diego, or if you don't and you just have the Odyssey app, you can listen to Ben and Woods and listen to their show as a podcast, even. Tell folks other ways that they can find your material, Mr. Woods.
That's a great question, Craig. the Odyssey app, I think anywhere you get podcasts. I don't know. I'm like Dave. I'm the artist. I don't mess with this stuff. I'll make Paul do all that. I'm just the creative one. No, I, you know, wherever you get your podcast, Paulie uploads them by the hour now. We went back to doing it hour by hour. So you can go if you miss the show, if you don't get up early, you want to listen to some baseball, some friends, you know, running mouth and having fun in the morning, we would appreciate it. And Craig comes on our show every Friday at 7:30. It's I think the only bit that survived the pandemic. So it's here. It's here to stay. And I mean, like my wife is, everyone's like obsessed with that segment. It's such a nice break in a Friday show and tease people up for the weekend. And frankly, it's nice to have some content at 7:30 on a Friday, buddy. It's all, I'll look over and sometimes Ben's just got his feet up and I'm relaxed and I'm like, let's turn it over to Craig for 10 minutes and talk. And we always have a great time. And so, yeah, anywhere you listen to podcasts, I think you can find us.
Appreciate you. And of course, you can follow Mr. Woods on Twitter at the Stephen Woods. So
correct. Thank you, buddy.
For Stephen Woods. Yeah, go Padres. Let's see if we can get two or three from the Rocks this weekend, eh?
Let's make it three, and let's make three blowouts is what I need at this point. I need three big Padre win blowouts. I'm over this shit at this point. Like, I'm ready for the All-Star break. I think we all are. Going to need to shut it down, reset it, get ready for the second half. It's going to be the wildest ride of many of our lives. I really think it's going to be insane, and I hope we make it. So.
Oh, and if you just happen to be an MLB Padres fan tuning into this that don't know, I do a Padres podcast that I've done for 5 years. So check it out at Padres Hot Tub, wherever you get your podcast. But Woodsy, have a great weekend, brother. We'll talk to you soon.
You too, buddy. Be well.
For Stephen Woods, this is Craig Elston saying thank you for tuning into episode 131 of Crossing Streams. And we will talk to you next week. Bye-bye.